Okay, good evening. We're continuing our deliberations on Sefer Melachim. Just very briefly, but by way of introduction, Perek Bet is a bit of a surprise. We see a side of David before he dies, which we've kind of seen it, possibly a hint of it before, but this is really kingship at the highest level of practice. In other words, what I said a couple of weeks ago is that the Book of Kings has got a specific agenda and a number of agendas. Obviously, there is a spiritual agenda that we spoke about, the idea that these leaders were not just, political leaders, but they were also men of the highest spiritual caliber. David, Shlomo, these are people who wrote the books that we treasure to this day, Shir HaShirim, Tehillim. I mean, these are amazing individuals. But on top of that, there's also the agenda of kingship. That very often what happens, and I think it could be, it's a pshat in the famous statement in Pirkei Avot, Derech Eretz Komel Torah, that sometimes Derech Eretz, the way of the land, has to come before the Torah. What does that mean? That means that when you get into a situation of running a country, Eretz, then there is a certain Derech, there's a certain way of running the country. And it may very well be that it may not necessarily conform, it won't go against, but it won't necessarily conform to the very basic ideas of Torah which we're used to. Let's put it that way. And we'll see in the beginning of chapter 2, Perek Bet, David really lays it on the line. This is the handout that I gave you from somebody called Rav Ariel, who teaches Tanakh in Israel. And the basic question we're going to deal with is, what happened to the David of the Book of Psalms, the David who we saw so much of in the Book of Shmuel? This is almost like a different man, as you'll see in a minute. So that's issue number one that we're going to deal with, which is the first part of chapter 2. And then the second issue which we'll deal with is really what happens to Adoniyo. Remember, last week we saw there was rebellion, and we've got this gentleman, Adoniyo, the son of David, who was older than Shlomo and certainly considered himself fit to be the king. And he made a rebellion, and it fizzled out. And to his muzzle, he wasn't killed. He was liable for death, being what is called Morid B'Malchut. He rebelled against the king. But you know what? That's the way it is, that at that point in time, Shlomo decided, he had Rachmonas, and he said, Adoniyo, if you behave yourself, as we read at the end of last week's Parsha, he said that, Lech Lebeitcha, go home and keep your head down and you'll live a long life. If you don't do that, then we've got a problem. And as we'll see this week, the problem already emerges in a very, very quick way. So, without further ado, we're looking at Perek Bet, page 10. And I want to sort of get into this a bit. And as I said, the first part is very intriguing. It's David's last will and testament. Okay, the king is dying. We know that he's at the end of his life. The Gemara talks about a different scenario when he died, that he was learning Torah, and the Malach HaMoves couldn't touch him. So they made a rush. The Gemara says there was like a wind outside the house, outside the palace, and he went to have a look. Sounded as if a tree was falling down or something like that. And at that moment he stopped learning and he died. According to the way it's presented here, we don't see that scenario whatsoever. But we do see an interesting scenario of David transmitting his last will and testament to his son. And of course, what do we expect David to say? Be a nice Jewish boy. Shlomo, you're going to grow up. You've got to run the country. Make sure that you go to a shir. Make sure that you daven three times a day. You know what? All the sort of stuff that we might expect to hear, this is what we would have hoped that David would have said. And you'll see at the beginning, he doesn't let us down. But then we get a bombshell. So without further ado, especially if Jerry's here, so we can start. Yes.
By Moshe and Yeshua, we hear Yeshua implore.
Right.
Why would you expect Shlomo is going to be any different?
Yeah, but there's more than that. With Shlomo, it's not just Chazak ve'emats, but make sure that you don't get killed by your enemies. We never heard that with Yeshua. We never had a concept, as we're going to see now, of a whole list of characters that David says to Shlomo, watch your back. Okay, and that's something that we never saw before, and that's the big difference. You'll see in a minute. Alright, so just hold that thought. We're looking again, page 10, and Pasuk Aleph, second chapter, Perek Bet. Now listen to this. The days of David were coming close to his death, meaning that there wasn't much time left. Vayitzav et Shlomo beno lemor, and he commanded Shlomo his son with the following statement. What I was going to do, which of course I forgot to do, is to dedicate the shir this evening, Le'ili Nishmas, this very, very special gentleman who passed away last week, in Fairlawn, Yossi Shachnovitz, Saliv Rocha, really a very, a tzaddik, an absolutely very, very unusual person. I could spend the whole evening giving a hesped, which I'm not going to do, but I think it's very fitting that what we're learning here, sort of, in a way, you know, it's what Yossi was about. A lot about the ideas of the sort of going into learning at a more at a deeper level and understanding the history of Klal Yisrael. You know, very often when we talk to him, and he would have this very interesting sort of knowledge of the early days in Israel, his own experiences. Very, very special person, and he really is missed. So, as I said, I hope that we can dedicate the learning in his memory this evening. So, Pasuk Bet. Hanochi Alech B'derech Kol Haaretz. So David says, "I'm going in the way of all the world." In other words, I'm just about to die. There's a very famous Orach Chaim HaKadosh when he talks about this with Moshe. How did the tzaddikim know this? How do they know that they're just about to die? There's something which you can't explain, and I don't remember now the Orach Chaim, but you can see that at the end, right in the last perek of the Torah, he talks about this concept that tzaddikim have a premonition. I always remember the story was told Yom Kippur 1958, Tovshin Yud Chet. That was the time, the day that Rav Elvela died, Rav Elvel Brisk, the son of Reb Chaim, the Rav's uncle. He died in Eretz Yisrael. And it was on Yom Kippur, so nobody knew about it till Motzi Yom Kippur. And it's interesting because in the yeshiva in the north of Israel, in Kfar Chassidim, the mashgiach there was Reb Eli Lopion, Zecher Saliv Rach, a very, very great Rav, a very great individual, Bal Musa, the whole deal from Kelm. And he'd been the mashgiach there for a number of years already, 7 or 8 years. And that whole Yom Kippur, he preached about the concept of Misa Tzadikim Mechaperes. The death of Tzadikim is a kapara, is an atonement. And everybody was a bit mystified. Why is he talking about Misa Tzadikim on Yom Kippur? Once, twice, the whole day. Till afterwards they heard the news that Rav Elvel had passed away. And it was almost as if Rav Elvel knew. He knew in his neshama that this great person was no longer in the world. So there is this concept, something within the very holy men, the tzaddikim, that they know that their time is coming to an end. Or they feel the loss. They feel the spirituality of the world is not the way it was. A great tzaddik has left the world. Again, very suitable for our dedication this evening for Yossi, Zichron Livracha. So, Gimel, look what he says. He says, let's do verse 2 again. Page 10 in your book. Anocha alech b'derech kol haaretz, v'chazakta v'yita l'ish. You've got to be strong. You've got to be an ish, right? As the Pirkei Avot. Eshtadel yot ish. Be a personality. Be a strong person. Posuk Gimel, v'shamarta mishmeret Hashem l'kech. And this is what we expect David to talk about. Keep the observance of God, l'alecha b'drachav, to go in his ways. L'shmo chukatav, mitzvotav, mishpatav, v'edvotav. Keep the laws, the statutes, the judgments, the testimonies, you know, everything. Kakatu b'Torat Moshe, as it says in the Torah of Moshe. Asha l'man taskil et asher taseh, you should be successful. Interesting, the word seichel in the Bible doesn't, well, I suppose it obviously means seichel in the sense of common sense, but it's also the concept of success. To really succeed, you've sometimes got to use common sense, what the rabbis call the fifth section of Shulchan Aruch. The idea of using your common sense from time to time. It's a very rare commodity indeed. Eid kol asher ta'aseh, there will be success in all that you do. Ve'eid kol asher tifneshon, wherever you turn. So far, this is the speech which we expect from David, and we have no problem, so far. But look at Pasuk Dalet already. L'man yokim Hashem et devaro. Why should you follow the way of God? Obviously, because then God will keep His word. Asher is the covenant. Asher diber alai le'mor, about which He spoke concerning me, saying, "Im yishmu banecha darkam, if your sons will keep the way, v'lecha b'fanai be'emet, to go in truth, b'chol levavim v'chol nafsham." This is a real drasha with their hearts and with their souls. Le'mor lo yikares lecha ish. Then you will be saying, "No one will be cut off." Me'al kisei Yisrael, from the throne of Israel. In other words, this is the recipe for a long malchut Beit David. This is what the house of David is built on. It's built on loyalty and observance of the Torah. Now, here comes the bombshell. In the middle of this drasha, all of a sudden we get an episode, pardon me saying so, I don't know which TV show I can compare this to, but let's say, you know, I remember The Godfather. All of a sudden, David becomes the Godfather. Hey, Gam ata yadata, you know, et asher asa li Yoav ben Tzruya. You know what Yoav did to me? Asher asa li shnei tzrei tzvod, Hashem, tzvod Yisrael. He killed the two generals of Israel, Avner ben Ner, which we spoke so much about in Sefer Shmuel. Amasa ben Yeser, right at the end, also Amasa, when he grabbed him by the beard, remember the story? And he killed him with a sword, and always in the fifth rib, straight in the heart, no messing around. Vayar game, and he killed them. Vayosem demei mechama b'sholom, and he as it were, he put literally the blood of war in a situation of peace. In other words, what he's saying is basically what Avner did was really unacceptable. He turned something warlike from what it should have been. He put the blood of war on his belt, literally upon his girdle, asher b'masnav, on his loins, b'nalo, asher b'raglav, on his shoes. In other words, he was covered in blood. And this is a person that you've got to be careful. He knows that Shlomo is a wise young man. He's very young. As I said last week, and I was right, by the way, I looked up about the Belzer Rebbe. The Belzer Rebbe I mentioned last week became the Rebbe. He was 9 years old. He was adopted by his uncle, Rabarala, the previous Rebbe. There's a whole story involved with that. You can look, if you Google him, you'll find out the whole story. And at 9 years old, he officially, that's when Rabarala died, 1957. The Rebbe was born in 1948. And in 57, the old Rebbe died, and that's when this 9-year-old young boy took over the Belzer dynasty. I mentioned it last week. He didn't officially take over till 66. I mean, they had to wait, I suppose, till he was nearly 20 years old. He was 18. But even at that point, but the concept of the 9-year-old, the Yingle Rebbe, you know, this young man sitting there with all these guys around him with the long beards is really something amazing. But there's a precedent, and we're reading about it now. Shlomo HaMelech. Right, this 12-year-old, according to tradition, he was 12 years old, and he's very smart. Okay, fine, but you know, he's got to make these incredible decisions. Look what he's got to do. Verse 6, Va, v'asita kachach matecha, do as your wisdom will dictate to you, v'lo toreid sevato b'shalom sha'ol, and do not allow his old age to happen. In other words, basically, he's not going to live a long life. Yoav, make sure that you are going to bring an end to his existence. Unbelievable. And this is cousin Yoav, his cousin, yes.
The question really is why David HaMelech didn't do that.
Why did David do it? David said that he had reservations. We saw this already in Sefer Shmuel. He's afraid of that. There's something there. It's a family issue. But I suppose, you know, Uncle David can't do this. Cousin Shlomo, especially now after the rebellion, maybe it's an opportunity to show his mettle, you know, and do what he has to do. It's very shocking. And Chazal even make it more shocking. Why does David say to Shlomo, in no uncertain terms, any excuse to kill Yoav? You got an excuse, go and kill him. And the answer is because he's worried about his Olam Haba. He says that he wants Yoav not to do anything worse, so that at least he'll get the reward in Olam Haba for what he did on the bright side, because we know that he was a Baal Tzedakah, a Baal Chesed. We're going to read about that later on. So, you know, it's kind of unbelievable cheshbon that they make over here, a calculation not to do with his immediate Olam Hazeh, his immediate living circumstance, but David is worried about his future in the world to come. Blows my mind, yes.
Your Adak mentioned, V'asisa kachach masaha, create a scenario that he will be high in Risa.
Correct, correct.
Otherwise, he was a great warrior, etc. He did good things. it's like a shady business.
You got it, and with Shimi even more so. All of this is very shady, very very shady, as you'll see. And again, this is a side of David that we just haven't seen. Excuse me a second. And it just is beyond belief. And not only that, look what he goes on to say. Pasuk Zayin. He says, so that's Yoav, deal with him. And Libelei Barzilai Giladi Taseh Chesed, those were the guys that helped David once upon a time, the sons of Barzilai, also at the end of Shmuel Ben. V'ayuboch le'shulchanecha, you've got to feed them in the palace, Kiken, Korvo Elai Bevorchi B'nei Avshalom Achich. When I had to run away from Avshalom, I went to B'nei Barzilai, and they helped me. So you've got to do kindness to them. So imagine what's going through his mind. Kill this one, be kind to that. I mean, this is like a list. This is a, you know, as I said, something out of The Godfather. And Chet.
It sounds like all this unfinished business.
And it's all unfinished business. But this is David. You know, this is the Mechaber of Tehillim. This is the guy who writes, you know, he's a very godly man all the way through the stories. And you can't get more ungodly than this. Yeah.
But there are people who will, you know, they can compartmentalize. They'll be, you know, they'll do Tehillim here, and they'll be killers over here.
I know. I always think of, what's his name, Meir Lansky, who ended up in Israel, did teshuva after all the years of not being officially a gangster, but everyone knew he was. And he was, yeah, but he ended up in Israel. He died in Yerushalayim. And whatever, it was in a time when we just went to live in Israel. There was a whole scandal at the time. And also Robert Maxwell was another one, the famous guy who
fell off the boat
and then was buried on Har HaZeitim. I mean, blows your mind. So what was going on with that when nobody ever knew the real story? So, you know, there are people who maybe can acquire their place. I don't know. I don't know what to say to you. But in this case, this is kind of shocking that this is coming from David. This is the last person we expect this to expect to be saying this. But listen, the final score, Posuk Chet, V'nei Imcha Shimi Ben Gera, we've still got to deal with Shimi. Now, what makes Shimi so special is the fact that David decided after that story with the curse that Shimi made, and eventually Shimi tried to sort of make amends, but he'd been so negative towards David, David took him as a Rebbe for Shlomo. So this is the unbelievable scenario, that at this point in time, David is saying to Shlomo, your Rebbe, Shimi, who I know, you know, taught you Aleph-Bet or whatever he taught you, but at the same time, be careful, because we do not have a very good history. And you know something, if he cursed me, he may end up cursing you. And he says, Ben Hayimini, he was from Binyamin, which of course is always the issue of there is this rivalry between the house of Binyamin and the house of Yehuda, which goes back to Shaul, who was from Binyamin, and now Shimi ben Gera. So this is like an old score. And where's he from? Bachurim. That will be important. That's the name of the place. We'll read about that later on. Vahu kalalani kalalanim ratzit. He gave me such a terrible curse. Biyom lechti machanayim. When I went to Machanayim, hu yorad likrati ayardeli. Went down to the Jordan. Vishavala b'ashem leman. I made an oath. In the name of God, imamitcha b'charev, that I will kill you. In other words, basically, he promised that Shimi would meet a rather nasty end, and Shlomo, it's now down to you. Boy, this is time to resign. V'ata al tenakeu, don't make him innocent, ki ish chacham ata, because you are smart, and chacham here again, the same idea like we said before, you're going to have to make a situation which, in which, as they say, the person hangs himself, literally. V'yodata et asher taselo, you know what to do. Final word of King David. And you'll bring his blood into Sha'ol. Sha'ol, what's the English translation? Hell. For a better word. So according to this, this is David's last word in this world, is the word Sha'ol. Whoa. Because what happens in the next verse? David dies and is buried in here. David, that of course is now the place where there's all the excavation going on. Eventually, I hope they'll find the cave of the way. They're still looking. There's a lot of stuff happening here, David, at the moment. What is so unbelievable, if this is really David's final word, I mean, you know, with all due respect, in a Shakespearean play, I would expect the King of England to die with the word, you know, hell on his mouth as he dies. I would expect the King of France, I would expect the King of wherever. But the King of Israel, King David, with the word Sha'ol, I'm not so comfortable with that. And this is the report of the last speech of David. Basically, be careful about Yoav, reward the Bnei Barzillai, and be careful about Shimi. Two negatives, one positive. And that's his warning. After giving him the pep talk, which we expected, he says to Shlomo, no uncertain terms, be a chacham, be smart, and watch your back. And it just is beyond belief. And this is the page that I gave you. I just want to show you very quickly what Rav Ariel says about this, because we need to put this in perspective. The reality is that Tanakh, there is a certain amount of repetition when it comes to certain events. We have Sefer Melachim, the Book of Kings, and we also have Divrei Hayomim. Divrei Hayomim, which is the Book of Chronicles, right at the end of the Bible. Now, the Book of Kings has got much more of an agenda, as we said 2 weeks ago. We spoke in the introduction, we said the Book of Kings is about the way of running the country, the kingship, the laws of kingship, the practices of kingship. That, of course, becomes very, very important in the next chapter with Mishpat Shlomo, the famous story with the baby, which we'll get to in a few weeks. And he's gone. And at the same time, there is this incredible sense of understanding, of course, that in the Divrei Hayomim, in the book of Divrei Hayomim, where the stories are told about the kings and one after the other, there it's much more factual. There it gives us sort of the non-embellished stories. In other words, it's not an agenda of learning about kingship and about running the country, but it's just the history that we need to know. So what Rav Aryeh just points out very obviously, I would say, but you need to say it, is that this is clearly not David's last word on this earth, Sheol. It would be very shocking to think that David would have died with this word on his mouth. You know, I would expect him to die with a Dvar Torah, with some sort of concept, some sort of godly idea, you know, Kaveh al Hashem, Chazak Yamislibecha, Kaveh al Hashem, you know, something like that. But here, no. So look at this page, and I'll just go through this very, very quickly. So I don't want to stop at this point, because we've got to deal with Adoni Yol today as well. So says Rav Aryeh, he says like this. And again, just to explain, he's a teacher in the north of Israel, in a place called Nov, I think it is, in the north of Israel, or I've forgotten now, I've got to remember. I think it's Nov, it's like a Beit Sefer there, there's a school there which he teaches at, and he's put out these wonderful books on the Novi. So he says the following, L'chara tzavot David mafliyav b'kat nuniyuta, pettiness. This last will of David seems to be incredible how petty it really is. It's so vengeful, and so cruel. You know, this is not the David that we've been dealing with for so long. Hamilim achronot shapasuk sam befi David heim narod. What David says at the end is unbelievable. It's frightening. But dam Sheol, that's his last words. In blood, go to Sheol, go downstairs. Keilu David met mit kishatam anakama chalil asfatam. He dies with the sense, the taste of revenge on his lips. Va'anu tzmeim, we're wondering, ha'im ruya ha'ita tzava'a zo l'sayim et chayv shal David. This is the end of David's life? That's what he said when he died? Famous last words? I mean, wow. Right, ruya zo, so he says, you have to understand, he chad mamadit u'mitzumsemet, that this approach is very limited, what we're saying now. Harbeit tzava'ot ayu l'David. I think it's important to appreciate. David gave many last statements. He gave many last will, verbal instructions before he died. And tzava'ot nifla'ot. And they were amazing. Shebehen hora l'shlomo la'am. He taught Shlomo and he taught the people. Alechei b'derech Hashem. Follow the way of God. V'zirama yirat shamayim. To be God-fearing. It's what we expect David to say. David amad bohem al afsut adam, and he shows you how man is so small, is almost nothing. V'al hashgacha, and the divine providence, amalavet, a tzaddik b'darko, which accompanies the tzaddik, is with the righteous man, who itziv lifnei ha'am et Yudav, and he told the people their goals, their aspirations, v'emid tochnit asiya, and he made a plan, Shemekazah, Hamasima, which is obviously going to have as its main focus, Livnot of Beit HaMikdash, to build the temple. So that's what we expect David to talk about. So the reality is that David, and he gives you the quotations there, Aleph Bet Gimel Dalet, and I wrote on the side where they're all referred to. Aleph over here, Divrei David Achronim, is Tzava'a Hagutit, which is his kind of, his will, which was based on a, Hagud, you know, sort of some sort of introspection, which is found in Shmuel Bet. I gave you all the references on the page. Then Bet is Tzava'a L'Shlomo L'Akim Et Mikdash. There's a will, a command to Shlomo to build the temple. L'Shmo Mitzvot HaTorah, which is to guard the mitzvot. That's Divrei HaYamim. Aleph Perik Chaf Bet, chapter 22. And then 3, which is the Eini Kol Ha'am Tzava'a Ruchanit Musarit. He gave a last statement to the people, which was obviously Ruchanit, was spiritual and Musarit and had Musa ethics, and that is again in Divrei Yamim. And then finally Vidui Tfilas Vugat Anava, a final confession with a tremendous anivus, with humility, Ger Anochi Imar Toshar Kechol Avotai, which is again in Divrei Yamim. So obviously there is a lot more that David said before he died. So of course the question is, what's going on in Sefer Melachim? So he explains, Hatzava Mofia Kam. So when we're talking about this last statement of David in the Book of Kings, he Tzava'a Medinit U'Masid, exactly what I said 2 weeks ago, that it's all about Mediniyut. Mediniyut means politics. It's about how to run the country. Medina. And Ma'asid, the practical side of what you have to do as the king of Israel. And as I said, and I'm going to follow through again and again to show you that Shlomo lived this kind of almost Jekyll and Hyde existence. In the one hand, he's Rib Shlomo, he's the spiritual figure. The king had to walk around with a Sefer Torah. This was what Shlomo Melech was. But at the same time, he's Melech Shlomo. He's got to show the signs of kingship. He's got to run the country according to the laws of kings. And if that is not legislated directly in the Torah, and so many issues it wasn't, then it becomes the practice of the Middle East. So he has a harem, 1,000 wives. I mean, where does that come from? You know, the Torah limits the wives of the king, but Shlomo felt, you know what? I'm a king in the Middle East. I want Israel to be part of the nations of the world, of the Middle East at that time. So I've got to be like the other kings. So I've got 1,000 wives in my harem, and that's what he had. And he had all the horses, and he had all the regalia, and he had all the pomp and circumstance. You know, coming from London, I can sort of relate to it a bit. And it's unbelievable, all of this. So this is what Shlomo had. And it's about the Medina. It's a different concept. And it's something which we have to understand. It's something which I've looked in the Svarim, most of the Svarim, except for Rav Ariel, I think really gets it. As I said a few weeks ago, I tried to look for more commentaries, modern commentaries, written from more the yeshivish world, and they don't talk about this side of Shlomo at all. And I don't even know if they want to touch this side of Shlomo, because it becomes very challenging. The case, I'll give you one example, the case of the baby. There is a halachic decision when you hold the baby up, and the halacha does not say, take a sword and cut the baby in half. You know, that's not a halacha that we actually find anywhere in Shulchan Aruch. And of course, the whole question there is, why does Shlomo Paskin, a psak halacha, he makes a decision which doesn't come from anything in our tradition, in our Jewish sources. And that's just one issue, and it goes on and on and on. His relationships with the other kings, but with the Malkat Sheva, which is a very crazy story, the whole thing of how he relates to the Queen of Sheba. All right, another thing. I mean, it's just amazing. And the answer is that there is a side, which I said before, Derech Eretz. He's got to run the Eretz. He's got to run the land. And in a way, Kodma LaTorah, sometimes this will go in front of the Torah. It will be a different presentation to the Rib Shlomo that we expect to see, or the Rib David as we did expect to see here, and we didn't see. We saw a bit of David in the beginning of his speech over here, and at the end, wow. This is Malchus. This is kingship. This is about watching your back, making sure you don't fall into a trap, making sure you don't get taken in, you don't get sucked in by this one, you don't get pushed around by that one. This is the laws of kingship of the Middle East, certainly in those days. Yeah. Yeah. He has a lot of issues with that. He thinks that he's like a free agent on this. We're going to come to all of this, right? That Barbanel makes some amazing statements about Shlomo, not very complimentary, all right, about the whole question of why he indulged himself with so many wives. But it's clear to me that there is this side of Shlomo, which is the political person. You know, he's a man of the Middle East of his day. And he wants Israel to be recognized as an entity. Doesn't want it to be sort of just closed ghetto, Meir Shearim style existence for the whole world. He wants Israel to be a power, and it becomes a power. Wow. 40 years, there's no wars. All right, it's amazing. His whole, till the last year of his life, or the last year of his kingship, presumably at the same time, then all of a sudden he has Tsaros. And that's a lot to do with his failures at the end. But we're going to come to all of this in due course. Yeah, sorry, Jeremy.
Doesn't he think he won't fall into the trap.
Yeah, this is what a lot of people argue, but I'm going to say a bit more than that. I'm going to say, yeah, he's very smart, he won't fall into the trap, but there's a reason for what he does. He's not just doing this to show how smart he is, because then, you know, you get the complaint that, you know, this is a smarty pants, what is he all about? And I think we're going to have to say a bit more. I think I want to say that Shlomo has an agenda of Malchus which is remarkable. But the question is whether it can be sustained. Whether Am Yisrael needs to have not only a persona from within, but a persona from without. Now, I think of a story, and again, I'm just going to embellish this before I go back to the text, with what happened, and I might have mentioned this before, I don't know, in 1965, when Churchill died. Churchill had a state funeral on Shabbos in London. And Zalman Shazar, who was the president of the State of Israel, came to London to be part of the funeral. He was a frum man, he was a religious guy. And Shazar, on that Shabbos, walked about 3 miles, and he had to get a police escort to follow him walking behind the hearse, which went very slowly, and this stuck out. This was on the news. The BBC covered it because he was the only prime minister who insisted on walking in the street. Why? Because Shabbos. And though he had to be there, he still sort of put his Jewishness in the public arena. And he wouldn't be Mechallel Shabbos in public. It's an amazing story. And there are pictures, look at the pictures of that. Go on YouTube, you'll probably find it's all there. You'll see pictures of this man walking behind the hearse. It's the Israeli Prime Minister, Israeli President. Remarkable. So what I'm saying is that when we're out there in the big wide world, the question is how to balance, on the one hand, our necessity for diplomatic relations, which we need to build up. And on the other hand, it's Shabbos and it's Yontov. And what do we do? And Israel, the status quo in Israel today is not to publicly desecrate the Sabbath. Menachem Begin, Zichron Livracha, took it to a new level that when they invented the gramophone, all right, the phone which was usable on Shabbos in an emergency, he was one of the first people to put it into the Prime Minister's residence. Because he felt that not only should he make Shabbos a public issue, but even people should know that in his home, the Sabbath is the Sabbath. And that was why he was really such a remarkable Prime Minister. And there is an issue here. This tension between the public and what we would call the private or the inner dynamics of the Jewish state. And I think this is what's going to happen here with Shlomo. And essentially, it's going to be a very big challenge for him. David never had this issue, right? David never saw Israel as going, all he saw was conquering, establishing, making the place safe, making safe boundaries, safe borders, as we saw at the end of Shmuel Ben. But not to create the kind of world power, the entity, which Shlomo clearly did. Shlomo made it into something special. People came from all over the world to listen to Shlomo. And I don't think he was giving a Gemara shiur when they were listening to him. I think he was talking divrei chachma, words of wisdom. All right, maybe a philosophical lecture, but it wasn't a shiur in Talmud. That's clear. It says so from the psukim. So there's no question that Shlomo had a different perception, a different concept. And I just want to go back to the text over here, and you'll see it, why this is so interesting. Because David here provides that bridge. What David does over here at Tzava'ah, it's about 10 lines down. Where it's underlined, where it says the word practical, political. What's going on over here? The last words of David are political and very practical. It fits the whole purpose of the Book of Kings. All of the wills, the last statements of David, David doesn't let us down at the beginning of his statement here. He talks about Torah, talks about Musa, about being ethical, about learning, and the teachings of Torah. Everything that he talks about surely comes from the knowledge, the education, the general education, which comes out of the Jewish tradition. And this is one of the laws which David makes a kind of statement to Shlomo, that there are Rishoyim in the state, and you're going to have to do din, judgment with those people. And of course, what did David do in this case? He set the parameters for Shlomo to say to him, it's going to be very unpleasant. You may have to engineer circumstances which will lead to the demise of certain people. Even a cousin, even someone who's your Rebbe. Shimi ben Gera was his Rebbe. We know this. We're told this in the beginning of chapter 3. And the reality is that, you know what? You've got to do what you've got to do. And as a king, you're going to have to get used to the fact that even though there is a generic concept of din b'rishayim, making judgment with the wicked, but how you go about it as king, that's something that you're going to have to work out yourself. And you won't find the answer in Shulchan Aruch. It's not going to be there. It's going to come out of your chokhmah. It's going to come out of your wisdom. And this is, again, as I said, the issue that we have to get used to now in Sefer Melachim, because we've moved into new territory. As much as Shmuel was the foundation of kingship, we're now going to see, as they say, halakha l'maaseh, we're going to see the practical application of kingship. So I really wanted just to read this particular part to you. The rest of what he says over here is very significant, but of course the answer to the question, was this David's last word on this earth? The word Sha'ol, the answer is no. And David said a lot of other things, and you've got all the references here, and you can look in all the different places, and you'll see the sort of speeches. David's final words, one would assume, would be much more referring to Hashem and to Chesed and everything that David stood for, everything that David is remembered for, that one would expect David to be saying before he dies. But as I said at the beginning, or I said already a few weeks ago, this gives us the kind of concept we're dealing with now, the medinit, the idea of running the country. How do you run a Jewish country? With great difficulty, I guess. To go back to the text, and I just want to show you now the part two of what we're going to deal with this evening, which is, of course, Adoniyahu. Adoniyahu is still around, and he's a bit of a pain, to put it mildly. Pasuk Yud Aleph, V'hayomim, back to chapter 2, verse 11. V'hayomim Hashem alach David al Yisrael abrim shana b'chevrom alach sheva shanim v'shalayim alach shloshim v'shalosh shanim. And this is the epitaph that he was king for 40 years, 33 in Jerusalem and 7 in Chevron. U'shlomo yoshav akisei David aviv v'tikom machuto ma'od. Shlomo sat on the throne, literally, eventually Shlomo made his own throne with levers and all according to the laws of physics. There's a whole discussion about it, which we're going to learn Mitzvah Shem later on. A very interesting whole description there. And his kingdom, Tikkun, was established. It was on firm ground, but not quite terra firma the way that David sort of warned him was still going to be a problem. So, problem number one. And David didn't even mention this, but Shlomo himself had already set up the chochmas we talked about just now, the kind of situation where you bury yourself and Adoniyahu is going to bury himself. Here comes Adoniyahu with his little plan. And his little plan is very simple. He has not given up the aspiration of kingship. We read about this last week and we saw how he failed in his attempt. But, you know, I'm still alive, I'm still breathing, I still have a certain amount of goodwill in the community. I'm going to try for another election, come back in 4 years, you know, sort of thing. Not quite 4 years, this is like maybe 4 months. And what does he do? Vayavo, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayavo Adoniyahu ben Chagit, so Adoniyahu arrives, El Bat Sheva, Eim Shlomo. He goes to Bat Sheva. Remember, she was kind of that program, the weakest link, right? You know, she was sort of the Yiddish mama, you know, they used to go to, I suppose, to schmooze, to go, she would sit down like Golda Meir used to do, you know, you walked in, and she'd make you a cup of whatever, you know, a cup of tea, a cup of coffee, sit down at the kitchen table, and then you talk about matters of state. And this is how I picture Bathsheba, certainly towards the end of her life, the sort of Golda Meir type character. And what does she say? V'tama shalom b'acha, are you coming in peace? V'yom shalom, yeah, I'm coming in peace, I'm not coming to make trouble, I want to have a schmooze. So this is Adoniyahu wanting to talk to Bathsheba. Everything is nice and cozy. Vayomer, so he says, Dovali Elayich, I have a request. Vatomer Dabet, so she said, Zog, tell me, what do you want? Vayomer, so he says, At Yodan, you know, Ki li hayta melucha, that I had the kingship. In other words, you know, he hasn't forgotten. This is something which is not out of his mind. It's very strange that he mentions this, because remember, Bathsheba was worried that she would be the focus of one of his first executions. Maybe Adoniyahu is not quite attuned to Bathsheba's feelings about this, but she lets him speak. He says, I had the kingship, the whole nation turned towards me to be the king, but and it went to my brother instead. And he says this was from God. So he's made a nice religious statement, and I suppose Bathsheba sits back and says to herself, well, thank God for that. At least he's being a bit more practical now. But look what he says. V'yata, she'ela achat anochi she'el meitach. The word anochi is very interesting. Anochi is a very, you know, in French, moi, right? You know, it's the emphasis. Ich. He says, I've got one request from you. Al tashiv et panai, do not turn away. In other words, listen to what I have to ask. V'tame elav, daber. So she said, get on with it. You know, the soup is cooking. Tell me what you want. Vayomer, so he says, Imri na l'shlomo ha-melech. Interesting, he's already recognized. Shlomo is not now anymore brother Shlomo. Okay, this is Shlomo ha-melech, as I'm pointing out the word melech as we go along. He understands that this has now got to be from the king. Ki lo yoshiv et panecha, if you tell Shlomo, he won't say no. V'yitei li et avishag ashun amid li isha, I'm going to marry Avishag. Sounds like a nice request, you know, sort of the shidduch meeting. I want to, you know, J-date, I think it's very suitable. You know, I'm certainly religious on this side and she's religious on that side. We'll make a nice shidduch. And it all looks very sort of kosher v'yosher. The problem is that she was, right at the end, the essentially the pelegesh. Not really the pelegesh, because we're told that they didn't consummate their marriage. Wasn't a marriage as such. So therefore, She was, let's call it, the possession of the king. So of course, what happens at this point in time is a very significant move. Adonio is basically saying, if I take over Abishag, and I do the maintenance, I pay her and support her, whatever, marry her, then this will be another reason why I can turn around later and become the challenger to the king, part two. And of course, Bathsheba realizes, or sort of doesn't take his sinister side. She's don lekav zechud. Look what she says. Pasuk yudche. Vatoma Bathsheba to. Okay. Vanochi adabe alecha elamelech. I'll go and speak to the king. And let's see what he says. So she's a gittin neshama. Vatavo Bathsheba elamelech. It's a great story. And she comes to Amelech Shlomo. So this is already, even the mother to the son is already treating Shlomo, not now as little Shlomo, but he's Amelech Shlomo. It's King Solomon, to bring the request from Adonijah. He doesn't forget it, even as king. He stands up, and he bows down to it, literally. He then sits on the chair, on the throne, and he puts a chair next to him for the mother of the king. He's got tremendous cover for her. She sits at his right hand, and of course the right side is the more important side, for all different reasons, as we sort of understand. And this is giving her tremendous cover. Now, what does she say? Vatoma, she says, she tries to play it down. I've got a little request. Unbelievable. I'm asking. Don't turn away from me. In other words, hear me out. You know, mummy, tell me what you want. I won't turn away. In other words, I'll hear you out. So what does she say? Avishag is now, you know, she's Nebuchad, the husband is gone. It wasn't even a husband, and she wasn't even married to him. She was just there to warm him. And you know what? She needs somebody to look after. Adonio has been very noble, you know, sort of very, sort of made a wonderful offer, and he wants to marry her. Now, at this point, Shlomo, he's very young, and he's so smart. I mean, it's kind of scary. But Yan HaMelech Shlomo, again, as Melech, this is not the brother treating the half-brother treating Adonio in a brotherly way, but he realizes as Melech, he smells a rat. Literally. Vayomer HaMelech Shlomo. Vayomer Le'imo. It's almost Vayana Melech Shlomo. Vayomer. He sort of, you know, he takes his time. Vayan. So he thinks about it. And then he says to his mother, V'lama Shoelet Et Avishag Ashunam Edoniyo. Why are you asking for Avishag only? V'shali Lo Et Amalucha. Why don't you ask him that he can be the king? In other words, he plays the card here. He understands the absolute purpose of what Edoniyo is doing. And of course, I guess at this point, Bathsheba is shocked because there is a tremendous silence in her direction. He's still my older brother. And he still has Eviatar, Kohen, Yoav ben Tzruya. He's still got these guys supporting him. So why didn't you come and ask that he should be the king? At this point, as King Shlomo, he makes the following oath. Ko yaseli Elohim v'cho yosiv. So may God continue to do ki benafsho diber Adonio. His request is that literally nafsho is going to give up his life for what he just did. Et adavar hazeh, this matter. V'atach hayashem asher chinani. God has prepared me v'yoshivani akisei David avi. Put me on the throne of David. V'asher asali bayit kasher diber. He made for me a house which he has spoken. In other words, we're already almost there, getting to the point where we'll soon be building a temple as well. Ki ayom yumat Adonio. Adonio will die. Wow. And of course, what does he do? He's got a henchman, Vayishlach HaMelech Shlomo. Again, Melech, he goes as king. This is something which is Din Birshaim, as we read, but you know something? The way he's going about it, he's got to have somebody to do the nasty deed. And he sends a Shalia, Biyab Benayo, Ben Yehuda, Benayo, who was the head of the army, Vayifgabo, Vayamot, and Adonio is killed. And all the Mephoshim say, Gevalt. What does Adonio really do at this point to deserve this unbelievable treatment from Shlomo? Excuse me. And I'll just read to you very briefly what the Gemara says about this, because there's Yerushalmi and also the Abarbanan. I'll just read this. I'm not going to hand it out at this point, but just bear with me. The Yerushalmi says the following, and it's just a very interesting comment. Rab Zera boy Kameda Rab Yosef Yerushalmi, where is it? It's Masechet Peah, Perikalef of Yerushalmi. He said, he asked the question, why was Adoniyahu killed? What did he deserve to die? Because he wanted to marry Avishag. So Omale, so the other rabbi said, you know what? I allow you mevakshim latir daman shebali machloket. He says, really, asking for Avishag was not the real reason to kill him. The real reason to kill him was that he was known as a Baal Machloket. The Pnei Moshe says, he says, Bishvil Machloket Shebarishona, Hitira Damol, they allowed him to be killed because of his original argument. The Abarbanel explains this. He says he made an agreement with Shlomo. And the agreement was that he was going to go home, Lech Labayit, he was going to be a nice good boy for the rest of his life, and you know what? He was never going to mix in matters of state. He was going to be, as it were, a kind of silent partner to the kingship. As I said, it reminds me in the English history to the Edward VIII, who abdicated, they went off to live in France, and was never heard of again till he died. Nobody ever heard of him. Thank God, he was a friend of Hitler, and had he been the king, carried on being the king, I don't know how the war would have turned out. Maybe not the way it did. Certainly in terms of the balance of powers and everything. It's frightening. You know, at that point, Hashem was doing something very unique with the whole story with Edward VIII. And I compare it here. It's very interesting that Adoniyahu was meant to be that kind of silent older brother. He was living in exile or somewhere, wherever he wanted to live. You know, he could live in the choicest place that he wanted and everything would be fine. But the Abarbanel says no. Because he wants to marry Avishag, he wants to bring back that whole story of what he was doing at the beginning, which is to revive the machloka, the argument. It says at this point, I'll just read the words of the Abarbanel. He says, "Had merit zarcha b'mitzcho." The whole rebellion was being revived at this point. And as a even negev lifnei Beit Yisrael tziva lahorgo, and Shlomo realized that if he doesn't put him to death at this point, then his whole future authority in Eretz Yisrael was going to be undermined. And you know something? This is almost as if you say that it becomes like a rodent. He's like somebody who's chasing you with a gun, and then you have an absolute obligation, a mitzvah, to kill the person before he kills you. There is it's an allowance to do so. The rodent and the nirdav, and as far as Shlomo is concerned, Adoniyahu had broken his agreement. He had broken all the promises that he'd made at the end of Perek Aleph, and he deserved to die. And this is what he says at the end here, Barbanel. All that happened was, you say nowadays he had a suspended sentence. From the first rebellion, he was put into suspended situation. And you know what? It's like in law today, if you come back and do another crime, then everything else becomes a crime as well. Everything that you did gets heaped up against you. And this was the reason that Shlomo decided, you know, enough. Adoniyahu is never going to leave me alone. He's never going to be out of the picture. You know what? Best thing that we can possibly do at this point, make a decision and ben mavet. And he's killed. There is no running to the Mizbeach. There's no possibility of him saving himself. He is gone. It's pretty shocking. And this is, again, something that I want to leave you with, because Mitzvah Shem next week will deal with the last two characters that we have to deal with in chapter 2, Yoav, and then eventually Shimi ben Gera. And all of this is really coming from the same issue that we spoke about at the beginning of today's shiur. And it's going to be with us again and again and again. That there are essentially almost like parallel tracks running here. There is the track of Jewish tradition. There's the track of where Shlomo is coming from, where David is coming from, where we're all coming from. But at the same time, in running the country, it is demanded of the leadership to have a perspective which is going to be, for want of a better word, majestic in this case, or in the nowadays, the whole Knesset. There's a very interesting research that was done and was written down by Rav Herzog, the first chief rabbi of the modern state, about the status of the Knesset. Someone asked him, Ashayla, what is the Knesset? It's a secular body. So the Israeli parliament, does it have a status in Jewish law? And he was very concerned with this question, and he brings tremendous proofs, and I think he even wrote some of this in English as well, it's available, and he's no question in his mind that the Knesset has the status of Malchus, of Melech. That it makes the laws which really are binding on the country. Midin Melech, we want to give it a sort of halachic definition, it's absolutely like the Malchus that we're reading about over here. And it's very fascinating, because this, as I said, comes a bit of a shock. We're going to see Shlomo behave in ways which are, let's say, lo na'im, not so pleasant. But you know something? You've got to do, as they say, what you've got to do. And as king of Israel, It's not a job for a Jewish boy. I think I'm going to leave it at that. That's a really shocking thought. Everybody have a wonderful week, and Mitzvah Shem will continue next week. Thank you.